This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 4 of Jeff Learns Wrestling. Yes, we are back. I am, of course, JT. With me is my best friend in the world. That's Jeff Machado. Jeffrey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm Jeff, and I'm learning wrestling.
Yeah, that's about it. Sums up the show. So it's been a while, Jeff, and why don't we tell everyone where you've been?
Well, I just recently came back from the Azores. I took a trip abroad with my old lady and several of her closest family members to São Miguel Island, that's St. Michael, to all you non-Portuguese-speaking people. When I say several, I mean 22. Yes, I went on vacation with 22 of my
fiancés. Did you rent like a house or something? Where did you stay?
No, we were all at the same beachfront resort for nine splendid evenings.
Very nice. So, you know, you factor in the flight times and the resettling, and, you know, we've had a bit of a layoff, but we wanted to let everyone know that we're here to stay. You know, we weren't just disappearing and everyone, because I actually had people asking me, like, demanding where the show was, and one even said, did Jeff already quit learning wrestling? And I said, no, he is still learning. And to the point is, to get you back in, you actually came and watched Great Balls of Fire with us the other night. Did you enjoy that experience?
I did watch Great Balls of Fire, and we could talk for an hour about why it's called Great Balls of Fire, but I digress. It was a shocking and awing experience, especially since I just came back from, you know, a foreign European island, and just watching that 3 hours was, I can't even really put it into words. I mean, it was like waking up in another dimension.
Because you said that you were coming, you came because our buddy Josh was here, and you were going to stick around for a bit, and then you were planning to maybe head out early. You had work the next day. And then you said you got caught up. You ended up wanting to stay through the end, right?
I don't know if wanting is the right word, but when Josh left, even when Josh was talking to me, I mean, I think he probably told me several things that happened in his life that were interesting, and I don't remember anything because I was just kind of, you know, when you're talking to somebody and you really want, it's usually like your wife or girlfriend, the TV's on and you really want to watch it, so you're kind of like, yeah, yep, and then she's like, what do you think about that? I don't know, because I was just watching the TV the whole time. That's what it was like with Josh, because I couldn't stop watching at the TV. Because I'm just watching 1986 wrestling, and this looks nothing like it. You got these like picture-in-picture replays and stuff, and it's just like, it's like the future.
And one of the things you noticed was the commentary being subpar compared to like 85 and 86, right?
Yeah, it was terrible. I always wanted to tell you to mute it, and then just like have you and Scott do all the commentary, because, you know, after Jesse the Body, like, where's Jesse?
Right,
what
now
would Jesse have said about that?
Right. Yeah. Right now Jesse's in a bunker somewhere in Idaho, I think, but he. Or maybe it's Mexico. I don't even know where he is. Did you have a favorite match of the evening?
Well, it's got to be the ambulance match.
Yeah.
I mean, the ambulance match. It's a match involving an ambulance. And it's not the first one.
Right.
Which I was instructed during the match that it was the fifth ambulance match. So they just have, like, ambulances ready to go.
Yeah. Did you like the finish when Roman Reigns dove into the ambulance?
I kind of turned for a second and I missed it. I turned and then he was in the ambulance. So I forgot. I didn't really see. I thought he was going to throw. Was it Braun Strowman? Braun Strowman Safari Planet into the ambulance. And then all of a sudden he was in the ambulance. So I have to rewatch that one. But
what did you think of the aftermath? Like with the ambulance crashing and all that stuff?
Well, first of all, do we know for a fact that Strowman is okay?
Yeah. I think he's okay. He was okay.
Do you think that it was a situation where they had two ambulances, or was the inside rigged, and then there was a tractor, there was like a trapdoor in the trailer or a manhole, and they switched out the bodies and they switched out the driver?
No, there's a good chance that that was pre-recorded.
Okay.
So they probably filmed it earlier in the day. He probably wasn't even in the ambulance.
Well, so you think like a stunt driver did the crashing?
Right.
Because that takes some skill to crash a vehicle like that.
My guess is a stunt driver. And then they cut to put Strowman in the ambulance. So there you go. Busting out walls for you. So anyway, why don't we head back about 30 years before that to 1986.
How do they practice something like that? Like, how do you practice crashing an ambulance in a parking garage? Like, do they have to call up, like, the ambulatory unit and say, we need to borrow an ambulance? First of all, they need an ambulance for the event.
Right. So usually it's like a, you know, those like contracted ambulances, like not like a city ambulance, like those private ambulance companies. I think usually they just rent one for the night.
Okay. Even be that as it may, they had to practice this. So how, you know how like when you're watching an NFL team, they, you can see the practices and like all the secret information gets leaked out about injuries and stuff. How does nobody know? I guess this is a question for wrestling in general.
Yeah.
They plan all this stuff. Do they have contracts about leaking information?
No, there are leaks. Like this guy, Dave Meltzer, who has run a newsletter since like 1980, whatever. I mean, he's made a living in millions of dollars
just
on
spoiling matches.
Yeah, or storylines that are coming when guys were jumping ship. And yeah, and there's actually right now these days, you can bet on wrestling in the UK. And there's a guy that goes like on Reddit or whatever and will leak information that like claims to be an insider. Or if you see the betting lines go a certain way, that means like inside information has come out. So, I mean, there's ways to like find out like what's going on. And there were even times too, if they pre-recorded something in the arena and they were uplinking the satellite to like their home, whatever, studio, that people would be able to see that coming across like a dish or whatever back in the day. And they would know, they'd see the footage ahead of time.
It seems like there's insurance implications there to bet on something that's scripted. It's like betting on the movie's ending.
Well, that's why I think it's just like overseas or UK. And it's really small money. It's like you can only bet like up to like whatever, $10 or something. You know what I mean? Like it's not, you can't go wild. You can't put millions on Braun Strowman to beat Roman Reigns.
Why don't you get all your contacts in the nation and like get some of those contacts? We can get some of the info. We can put some bets down over there.
All right. So why don't we go back to 1986? Save me for yourself, gambler.
Stay tuned for Justin Learns Gambling, because Jeff is such a degenerate. I'm the only fucking person in this entire world who gambles. Let's just change the subject. Jesus Christ.
Okay. Terry Funk battles Hulk Hogan. Saturday Night's Main Event, January 4th, 1986. So we're going to spend this show going through a good chunk of 1986 in the WWF. And we open this up. Hulk Hogan's the champion. Terry Funk is the challenger. He had come in late 1985. And, of course, do you know any background of Terry Funk? Did you glean anything from what they were talking about?
No, I had never heard of him before this match, and I still don't know anything about him except for the fact that he was in this match.
Okay, so he's a pretty legendary wrestler, was NWA champion multiple times, had wrestled all around the world, and he comes in, he had already retired once, I think, by this point, and came out of retirement.
Is that why he's fat? Was he always just fat, or was he just getting older and out of
shape? He's just older and just old man gut at this point. So he comes in here and he's pretty much pushed like right toward the top and gets into this feud with Hulk Hogan for this little couple of title matches here. So this is like their big final match on Saturday Night's Main Event, national TV. Have we watched a Saturday Night's Main Event match before?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was, but I remember.
Okay.
I remember
so you know the concept. It's on NBC late night, replaces Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So big time match. I mean, this is a big match. Let me ask you, give me your notes first, and then we'll talk about a couple of questions I have.
Well, I didn't really have many notes, except for the fact that Terry Funk seems kind of out of Hogan's league in terms of his physical prowess. And I don't know if this is the first match I watched with, what's his face there, the manager?
Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart. But he seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, you like Jimmy Hart?
I like that he went under the ring at some point, which no one ever does. I always wondered what was under there. If it was like a solid structure, if it was like going under someone's bed, but like he shot under the bed. And
yeah, you can go across. Funny. It's all open under there. But yeah, he's manic out there. I'm glad you liked him.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. He's very hateable, but he's like high energy. He's like the opposite of Cyndi Lauper.
Right.
As a manager. Yes. He just failed miserably. But I remember at one point Jesse said something about the Junkyard Dog not having a right to be there because he wasn't a legal manager, and that made me laugh. Is that a real thing? Like, do you sign up as a manager?
In those days, they were much more realistic with the way they presented stuff. You know, as real as it could be. So, yeah, they used to talk about, like, to be at ringside, you needed a manager's license to be active manager at ringside. And actually, back in the day, in the WWF, like in the 70s and early 80s, managers would just bring the guy to ringside and then leave. They didn't even stay at ringside. They were presented as more of managers, like in a business sense, and they would do interviews or whatnot, but they wouldn't stay at ringside during the match. That changed as they moved more toward grandiose storylines and whatnot, and having the manager at ringside did add to the ambiance because they could get the crowd extra rallied, they could help cheat and do stuff like that. So Junkyard Dog had been feuding with Terry Funk for a while, and they had actually branded him with the branding iron. So he was out there trying to get revenge along with Hogan. So that's why Jesse's all against him.
That's funny you mentioned the branding iron, because that was my favorite line in the match. He's like, I think Gorilla was like, what does he have a branding iron for? Then Jesse goes, he always has a branding iron. What's the matter with you? That's like his thing. Come on now.
Right? You should know. So you thought Terry Funk looked old and fat, but did you enjoy his style? Because did you pick up on how, like, just wild he was compared to a lot of guys? Like, he doesn't, there's like not as much formula with him. You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of just all over the place, bouncing around, pinballing around, coming at you. You know, he's just kind of this wild energy.
Yeah, frenetic is a good word.
Yeah.
Very frenetic. But, you know, Hogan would do his thing where he would, like, intercept those crazy moments and throw him into the ropes. And he would, he was like the most awkward wrestler I've seen yet going over the ropes.
Right.
It was kind of like when you see an old guy try to jump like on top of a stone wall and it takes like that extra little bounce. That's what he was doing. He'd like get on top of the
rope. Do you see old guys jump on stone walls often?
Well, I'm a mailman, so that's where you see everything. It does happen from time to time.
Why are they jumping
on
a wall?
Not a wall, but like a foot, you know, any kind of hop. Okay. You're hopping over a puddle.
All right.
A kid just goes right over the puddle, but an older guy would be like, you know, hit the edge of the puddle and pretend like he didn't just splash his pants.
Okay, I got you.
So he would like get knocked over the rope, but then kind of dangle on the top of the rope a little bit and then fall off.
He was very, a lot of showmanship with him. Like, I think everything was just exaggerated. You know, when he gets punched, he really stooges around and stumbles around and shakes and quivers and then falls. You know, he's just very over-animated.
You know what's weird? Maybe because I just came back from Portugal and I had too much to drink, but I just watched this match like a day or two ago, and I could not pick him out of a lineup.
No?
That's how good of a performance he gave. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't into it. But all I remember is that he had red pants on and he had a gut. So maybe I'll have to go back.
Yeah.
Maybe I need some more Terry Funk stuff.
Yeah, we can get some more Terry Funk stuff. He's really fun when you get to see a lot of his work. And, I mean, it's not even, like, he's had some great matches with Ric Flair that we'll get to when we do some NWA as we move toward the 80s. So maybe you'll see some of it there. Any other thoughts or notes on this match?
Well, this was the first in the arc of matches that you gave me, and it started a theme that would ironically or coincidentally, whatever the word is, follow throughout all these matches, which was that...
It's nice to have a partner that self-corrects ironic and coincidental.
Yeah, you know, I have a certain reputation to uphold. I have an English degree, after all.
I like it. I don't have to step in and correct you like I do with other partners.
Well, the thing is, I can say ironically and still technically not be incorrect, because ironically it can capture such a wide range of things.
But ironically, he's usually wrong when he uses it.
But the pile driver.
Yeah.
Because Funk gave Hogan a pile driver in this match, and it was terrible.
Yeah. Was it one where he just kind of like fell back?
Yeah. He picked him up, and my image of the pile driver has always been one of two ways. Either you go down on your knees and the guy's head in between your knees, or you go down on your butt and the guy's head is in your crotch. But this time he kind of picked him up and then just like fell backwards. And I don't think Hogan's head was like at least a foot from the mat.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh my God, Funk's going to win. He just landed a pile driver. And I laughed out loud. And I was like, that is the worst pile driver I've ever seen. And coincidentally, every match from here on out contains a terrible pile driver.
Really? Even there's one match we'll talk about the pile driver. I'm curious your thoughts on. All right, so usually we go through some categories, but we talked about maybe not being beholden to these. But anything that stands out, I mean, was Hogan to you the best, obviously, as usual, in this match?
I think they're both just too similar. Like, they're both big and gangly. I think it's better if somebody like Hogan is fighting a more agile guy. Because otherwise, it's more about, like, you know...
Or a really big, fat guy.
Yeah. Because then you have the whole, is he going to slam him thing? Right. Is he going to get his ribs cracked thing?
Did you like the announcing of this, Vince and Jesse?
Oh, yeah. Classic. Classic all the way. Branding iron comments. Hall of Fame stuff.
Atmosphere. It's tough with the NBC stuff because you don't know how much of it they've kind of sweetened up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, so there was no, like, introductions. There was no, like, walking to the ring and stuff. They just kind of started. It was, like, darkish. Very old school. But it was nice.
Would you watch this one again?
Yeah. Yeah, so as far as the categories go, I think we decided to kind of generalize them a bit more because I feel uncomfortable assigning grades to these matches since I don't know anything.
Yeah.
So once I have a more like refined or, you know, what's the word? Lucrative. Not lucrative. What's the word that means big?
Expansive?
Expansive, yes. Catalog. Then maybe we can go back and start grading them. But
okay, so what would you grade this match?
This match gets 2 out of 5 stars. Okay. All
right, let's go to the next match. We continue through 1986. We go to the Boston Garden, and this is Tito Santana, the Intercontinental Champion, defending against Randy Macho Man Savage, or as Gorilla Monsoon says... The
not so macho man.
Right. He beat that into the ground, says it constantly.
I don't like how he's been treating Elizabeth. What has he been doing to Elizabeth? And is Monsoon like secretly in love with Elizabeth?
No, he's just upstanding for women. He's women's rights. But Savage is very overprotective of Liz, kinda you know, kinda points her to the corner and threatens to hit her, or, you know, kinda grabs her chin like that and pushes her away, and
I don't like that.
No, no, that's why.
For those of you
so
who can't see, which is everybody, Justin actually just punched me in the chin.
Yeah, so I think they even mentioned that he grabbed some flowers that a fan had brought for Elizabeth and smashed them on the way into the ring.
And flowers are expensive. I remember Gorilla saying that. You can't just destroy flowers. That's expensive.
What did you...
Not as much as you would think.
Now, this is our first exposure to Santana, right?
No, I saw, well, actually maybe that was one of the WrestleManias where I just watched ahead.
I think so.
Yeah, so we haven't actually discussed him yet.
What do you think? You like Chica?
Yeah, Chico? Is it Chica? Isn't Chica girl and Chico's boy?
Yeah, well, it's Tito Santana, but Jesse calls him Chico all the time.
Chico.
Yeah.
It's oh, like, so it's
like derogatory insult, because
so
Jesse's
not
very
actually
racist.
Chico. Okay.
Yeah, it's Tito.
That's great. So by this match, Savage is already heel and Tito's already a face.
Well, Savage has always been heel, remember?
He's always been heel.
Yeah, because he came in and we watched that. Remember the match with Hogan we watched?
Oh, okay. So this is after the Hogan thing.
Which Hogan thing?
This is after the Mega Powers breakup?
No, this is way before they even got together.
I'm so fucking confused right now.
That first episode that we watched, forget everything you saw. Because I'll let you know when we're getting there. So just pretend that didn't happen. So the Savage you saw so far was him versus Hogan at the house show, where they had that wild brawl that Savage won by countout.
Right.
Right. So this is after that. This is like right after that.
Okay. Okay.
So Savage had been around for like 7 months or so, and he's been a manic heel that...
But this is after the tournament.
No. Forget everything you saw in that first episode. That all was right. The tournament and all that stuff. All
right. So let's just move on to Tito. What's Tito's deal?
So Tito's great. He's one of the best fiery baby faces you'll see. A lot of charisma, good connection with the crowd. Great worker, like works at a wild, fast pace all the time. A smart worker, like he knows when to slow down a little bit. He sells great. Have we talked about selling yet? We talked about that, right?
Yeah. Okay. He's a good seller.
Yeah. So he's a great seller. I mean, I think he's one of the best. We're working on a project right now. We're doing the top 100 WWE wrestlers of all time. And to me, Tito's like a top 25, probably.
Have there been that many?
100?
Oh, there like are thousands. More than 100 wrestlers?
Well, we made a list and we came up with like 3-something.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
You know what? I don't know if I have time for this.
No, you got time.
How about this? You just do the top 25 list, and then we'll go through those guys. We'll go through, like, a career highlight.
We're going through history. We are going through history. So here we are, Tito Santana. But did you get that feeling watching Tito, that he was really good and had, like, a connection with the crowd?
Yes, I remember watching this match because, obviously, Savage is a good seller, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't want to sound like an idiot just
now. No, you sound great.
There was a suspension of disbelief where I was like watching two guys wrestling. So if I'm not, it's kind of like the refs in football. If you're not thinking about them, they must be doing a good job.
Right. So you're not sitting there thinking this is fake. You're actually buying in that these guys hate each other and are wrestling each other.
Yeah. Chico, aka Tito, didn't do anything where I was like, oh, that's ridiculous.
Right. And that's why he's one of the greats, because everything makes sense when Tito wrestles. Like nothing is out of place. Nothing feels forced. Everything organically moves to the next. And he gets that, as Gorilla always says, that Latin blood flowing hot. And he comes up, you know, very fiery. And
Gorilla loves to comment on things like that that most guys don't. Like either their looks, like he's always saying people look good, or, you know, the Latin blood. That's like a weird thing to say.
He's very into look and size. Like if you watch enough of these house show shows where Gorilla... We'll talk about how much weight a guy's put on since the last time he's seen him, how much weight he's lost. Oh, he must have lost 25, 30 pounds. I mean, like, he says it like it's 3 pounds, you know, like 25, 30 pounds. It's been like 3 weeks since we last saw the guy. He's known for, like, really embellishing things and, like, just making shit up all the time. That's Gorilla's thing. But his voice is so good, and he's so He's the voice that you want to hear as you're falling asleep at night. Gorilla
Silky
and Jesse.
Smooth.
Right? It's just like...
I would love for those guys to be talking behind me, like, for
just
my
about
entire
your life,
life.
Right?
Yeah.
Just narrating your whole life.
That'd be great.
Here comes Jesse. Here comes Jeff Machado, Jesse. Looks like he put on about 25, 30 pounds lately.
Man, he just doesn't know how to talk to women, Gorilla. That's a Bush League move, Gorilla.
Will you stop? All right.
Where'd you get those flowers, Walmart? Come on, those flowers are expensive.
All right, so Tito Savage for the Intercontinental title. Thoughts on the match?
Well, okay, the figure four. Everyone loves the figure four. Does that even, like, is it even a thing? Can you put a guy in a figure four and it would be painful?
Yeah, I think so. I think the key is when you
have
are...
you ever been in a figure four?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. The okay. key is really if you, the leg that comes across, if it goes over the knee and then you're pressing down, I think it puts a lot of pressure on the knee.
Okay.
We can try it on air if you want.
How many guys...
test out the move.
How many guys is this their main finishing move?
So Ric Flair is obviously the most famous guy that used the figure four. But Greg Valentine was another one. And then Tito. I mean, those are like the big three in this era that were
so
really using it.
He has enough cachet to make it like, oh, Tito's going to do the figure
four. You know what's funny? I was actually thinking about this exact topic today when I was watching this match, that Tito, because he actually gets away from it as time goes on. And it made me wonder why, because he was really good at it. But it may be more of a heel move than a face move, and that's why, because it worked the leg, worked the leg, worked the leg, and lock it in the baby face fights instead of the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, for a face, I imagine it's a lot more exciting to pin a guy and
right.
get the exciting referee motions going, the crowd goes crazy.
Yeah.
But that's not how it ended, so I've never actually seen Tito pull off a crowd-pleasing figure four.
Yeah.
What's up with the foot in the ropes? Have we talked about this before?
We may not have, but it's okay. We can do it again, even if we did.
What difference does it make where the guy's foot is? Like, how does that say... How does that... Oh, you can't keep the hold anymore. It doesn't count as a pin just because his foot is touching a rope.
Well, I guess it's like boxing, where if you're up against the ropes, the ref can break the hold because, you know, you're kind of made it to a safe zone. So the rope is kind of a safe zone. It forces the break. You're going to pin them in the middle of the ring. So if I have a hold on you... You know, not only can you be in the ropes to save yourself, I can't use the ropes for leverage. So the ropes are kind of like, think of the ropes as almost like outside the ring in a
way. So it's like lava on the floor when you're a kid.
Right. Or it's just like outside the ring where that
or outside the ring.
So, like the ropes to me are just, you know, it's the edge of the ring.
You can stand on
them. It's like
out
of bounds.
You can stand on them to jump on a guy, though.
Sure. But think of it like out of bounds.
Out of bounds.
If you go out of bounds, you know, you can't score a touchdown.
All right, so if you're standing on the back side of the ropes, on the apron.
Right.
Can
that's
you
out of the
can
ring.
It out?
Yes. That's outside the ring.
Okay.
So you have to be inside, not touching the ropes, to be legally in the ring.
Gotcha.
So you do a rope break. You can, if you get pinned, you can put your foot on the rope. If you're in a submission, you can grab the rope to break it.
All right, I guess we covered the ropes.
Yeah, you're good. Good
yeah,
ropes.
Okay. I'll probably have some more questions later.
Yeah, that's okay.
I just don't like how these matches are refereed sometimes.
What did you think of the referee's outfit on this one, Danny Davis? He kind of had the khaki pants and like tennis shoes on?
Yeah, he had like a polo shirt with his shirt out.
Yeah, it was
and, like,
weird.
Sneakers.
Very sloppy looking.
Was he like a famous person?
Danny Davis ends up being a very famous referee, and I wanted you to make a mental note of him and the way this match ended, because we're going to see more of him down the road. So just mental check on Danny Davis for now.
Does he get retribution for the roll of quarters? Is that what you're saying?
Keep Danny Davis in mind. There's
Danny Davis. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be something.
So what do you think of the finish with the metal object that he pulls out of his penis?
I thought it was great because his Speedo is so small. How is he keeping something like that in there?
Yeah.
Is it taped to his taint?
Or, Jeff, was it a sleight of hand? Did he just have a little something that you could
see?
Oh,
like so they cut the camera. Somebody from the crowd throws it to him. He catches it and then sticks it in his pants.
Or he never had anything in his hand at all. He just reaches in, pulls it out.
No, he definitely had something in his hand.
Well, he might have something a little tiny, but not like an actual piece of metal. You know what I'm saying? Like he could fake it a little bit. So might have spent
it was sticking out of the side of his hands. It was like an hourglass.
Yeah. All right. So maybe this time it was real.
Because I thought it was really a roll of quarters, so I rewound.
There is a chance, like if he was outside the ring or something, he could have grabbed it and put it in there when he was on the floor or something like that.
I thought that it was cool because I like when guys do dirty stuff, but I thought the actual hit was lame.
Kind of weak.
Yeah. Because he just kind of like, ding, like tapped him. And I don't know, maybe that's
well,
like
I
a
guess,
perfect spot for blood, right? If you're going to knock out a guy with a sharp object.
Right, have bleed. I guess the idea is you only need to knock him out for 3 seconds. You don't need to knock him out permanently. So as long as it's enough just to bewilder him for 3 seconds, that's all you need. Were you excited that Savage won the title?
Oh, yeah. I love Savage. Whether he's good or bad.
Did you anticipate him to win that title heading into that match?
Yeah, I don't understand why you would show me a match where someone named Tito Santana beat Randy Savage. Although right. Now I feel bad because you're like, oh, Tito's
awesome.
One of my top 25.
But one of the best parts about Tito is he is a, I don't want to say chronic failure. He does win. But
chronic failure. But a pretty big failure.
But he does, but his job is to really make other guys look good. Like, that's his big job. Especially as we head forward from
here. The straight man is just as important as the comedian.
Right.
Vaudeville.
So, I mean, that's his role. Is this the guy, but he looks awesome doing it because he has a lot of credibility and he's great. So if one thing I can convince you of is the greatness of Tito Santana as we move forward. But I'm glad. It sounds like you're already buying in on how good Tito is.
Yeah, he's very impressive.
All right, any final thoughts on that match?
Why doesn't he have a nickname, though?
Arriba!
Arriba?
No, that's what he says.
Oh.
Yeah, he doesn't need one.
I mean, he has a cool name
he's
already.
Tito fucking Santana. Doesn't even need a name. He's just the man. Any further thoughts on this one before we move on?
No, I guess I'm just on a constant journey to find out what Macho Man is doing when he's pointing at people.
Okay.
I'm just obsessed with him. He just points. But he says something, too.
He's just always shit-talking.
So if we ever go to a live match...
We're definitely going.
Can you hear what they're saying?
Yeah.
Because when they're in the ring and they're trash talking, you can't I can't hear what they're saying. And I'm like, what are they saying?
If you're close enough, you can hear the shit talking.
Like, the referee goes up to the guy and he's like, blah, 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 blah. What can a referee possibly be saying?
Right. Well, sometimes...
Don't do that again.
Right, so it's in that. Sometimes they're giving them instruction.
Oh.
You know, it's just kind of masked by yelling.
That would be... If I could hear two people pretending to be mad at each other but actually talking in a constructive way...
But see, that's bad wrestling. Because there's been times where you'll hear a guy be like... Close on me, like, you know, or whatever, or here we go, you know, like, it's bad. You're supposed to be able to conceal
that's
it. That's what
stuff.
Makes a great wrestler, is they can hide it. We are going to go to a show. I'm just thinking of, I don't want to take you to a TV taping, like there's a SmackDown coming. I don't think you'll like that as much. We need to go to like a house show to really just bring you up to speed, and then we'll go from there. We're going to go, though. We're definitely going to go. Me, you, the cowboy, Andy, we're all going to go to our show. All right. Let's go to Mash.
Do they sell beer at these things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if we go to the Dunk, they'll have beer.
Oh, man.
All right.
I don't know. I went to a graduation at the Dunk. They did not have beer.
Well, that was school related. This is not school related. No one's going to wrestling and not drinking a beer, so you're good.
The Friars are school related. College basketball?
You went to a college graduation or a high school graduation?
College.
I don't know what to tell you. Was it at like 11 in the morning?
It was 9.
Yeah. Well, that might be why.
I got scolded by the lady behind the counter. She's like, you know what time it is?
Yeah. Well, that's
do you have any idea what the next 3 hours of my life are going to be like?
That's true. All right, let's go to WrestleMania 2, bigger, badder, better.
WrestleMania 2, : what the world has come to.
That's right. WrestleMania 3 is bigger, badder, better, what the world has come to. So here's the unique concept of WrestleMania 2. They did this in 3 locations with 3 different commentary teams.
I noticed that because at one point Gorilla was like, goodbye from here. Let's go. I'm like, what do you mean goodbye? Yeah. This isn't the end of the show. And then they went to another place.
So they had the first part of the show was in New York. In Long Island. Part 2 was in Chicago, and then part 3 was in L.A.
The production costs must have been insane. They must have been like, we're never doing this again, right?
And it kind of backfires, because they end up wanting to do 4 matches in every site, and they end up having to rush a lot of it, and it's just like, it's a very clunky show.
Yeah.
And they had a really thin out, like, did you notice the commentary in the main event that we watched? Like, Lord Alfred, Jesse, and Elvira were doing that.
Elvira, yeah.
Like, they tried to have a guest female in every site. The whole thing was just weird.
At some point, Jesse said something to Elvira that was kind of like a joke, but kind of related to the event. And she goes, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, this is great. This is great stuff.
All right. So we start in Chicago, where the Dream Team, Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine, are defending the tag team championships against the British Bulldogs with Captain Lou Albano and...
And Ozzy Osbourne.
Ozzy fucking Osbourne. So this is a really good build into this match. The Dream Team had the belts for a while. And Luscious John, their manager, had helped them cheat to win the belts by smashing a cigar in the face of Barry Windham. So they've been tag champs for a while, and the British Bulldogs have been chasing them all over the country. And they cannot get the win, or the Dream Team escapes with the belts by, like, DQ or something. And the Bulldogs finally say, if we don't win, you know, we're going to leave and go back to England, bitch. You know, so they're like, whatever, we're out of here.
Stay with Ozzy Osbourne, bitch.
Right, so they're like, we're gone. We're out of it. We're going to leave the U.S. if we can't win, because we can't compete. We're gone. So the big crux of this match was 2 things.
It's a good word, crux.
Crux is that they're going to stay. They'll stay in the U.S. if they win. And also, there were two referees because leading up, there's a lot of shenanigans in these matches. So they have a referee on the outside and a referee on the inside to help keep the peace.
Counteract the shenanigans.
And then we have Ozzy Osbourne as well out there with the British Bulldog. A pretty big get in 1986 for them to have him out there with the Bulldogs. That's not even a main event match, and yeah. He's out there with them.
Well, they're British.
Right. So there's a tie. I'm just saying it's a big get.
British people like each other.
They all stick together.
Yeah.
All right. Thoughts on this match?
Let's see. Was he not the Beefcake at this point?
He was Brutus Beefcake, not the Barber.
He wasn't the Barber.
No.
Yet? Or he had already been the Barber and he gave up the Barber?
Not yet.
Okay, so the Barber comes in to play.
Right. So he's only a year in at this point, Brutus Beefcake, and he's pretty green still. That's why they put him with Valentine, who's like a great veteran, and Valentine has been really mentoring him. And if you notice in this match, like Beefcake's barely in the match. I don't know if you picked up on that. Like Valentine wrestles like almost the whole match.
Yeah. I thought Valentine was really good.
He's awesome.
Very powerful, strong dude. He did a lot of suplexes, and the thing I noticed about the suplex that I never really thought of before is that they grab like the waistline mm-hmm. of the pants. So how is that possible? Like, how do they not just rip the pants off when they put the guy in the air? Like, you think they're just getting like a really bad wedgie every time?
Well, because it's wrestling and it's, you know, guys working together, the other guy kind of jumps.
Okay.
So you're not deadlifting him by his tights. You're kind of, the other guy's kind of helping you come up as you're going up.
I still don't understand the physics of it, but that's okay. We'll move on. The Hammer is a really cool nickname.
Yeah.
I wish that was like my nickname.
Jeff the Hammer?
Yeah. We actually, my favorite, one of my favorite chess players, his name is Hammer. John Ludwig Hammer. So now I know two cool Hammer guys.
That's it. And MC Hammer.
That just takes it down.
So Valentine, did you notice that he worked stiff, hard hitting, like snug? Like everything he seemed like it really fucking hurt when he laid it in.
Oh, yeah. Does that mean he's not a good seller because he's not pulling his punches as well?
Like no, it means he's really good at it.
Oh, okay.
Like he's really, you know, they may feel it a little bit more from a Greg Valentine, but he's not really clobbering them. But he's so good at just coming in like real tight like that, you know, and just everything just looks so hard.
Yeah, he was scary. I would not want to fight him.
He's another guy who's probably in my top 20 or 25. That's how good he is.
Would he be higher or lower than Tito?
Probably, oh God. I think I'll have them like back to back.
Ah, it's not so easy being on the spot, is it?
No, I think I'll have them back to back.
Back to back. One's got to be higher.
Let me tell you this. If I were to tell you that Greg Valentine and Tito Santana had one of the greatest feuds in WWE history, would you believe me?
I would say if you're lying, that'd be mean.
Would you want to see some of that feud?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll have to work some of that in because they have some awesome matches.
I wonder who wins.
They have some great matches. Great feud. Two awesome guys.
Is the Hammer always a heel? Because I kind of like him.
Always.
Actually, you know what? Screw that, because I don't care about rooting for heels. I like Savage. I like Giant.
There are so many guys that love heels. That was one of them. You grow up. Early on, you may like the faces because you're a little kid, and then you grow up into a more jaded teen or a young adult, and you start to like the bad guys.
Yeah, like, you know what? Screw it. Let the heels win.
Yeah.
They're just doing what they got to do.
Valentine's only a face for, like, a year, maybe. It's toward the end of his career. But for the bulk of his career, he's a... just a nasty, hard-hitting heel. All right, so give me more thoughts.
There were a lot of crotch shots.
Yeah.
That was I guess that's a thing, like just hitting guys in the balls.
Mm-hmm. Lots of crotch shots in this match.
Is that like an error thing, or is that all of wrestling just trying to hit guys in the balls? Because kids like seeing a guy get hit in the balls.
I think so. That's part of it. And it's, you know, it's a good...
As an adult, I don't like it.
It's a crafty, illegal like move.
It makes me...
Especially as a male adult.
You know, that's terrible. Valentine, as strong as he is, he delivered a terrible pile driver. That's the second one that we've seen.
So you didn't like that one? I like how fucking, like, how hard he drills him.
I think he was falling. I think it was a coincidence that it actually landed, but he was up in the air all crooked, and he, like, fell forward, and
that's what made
it
great.
Oh, he kind of had to roll and stand up, like, oh, I meant to do that.
See, I'm a fan of the style that, like, I like when it's a little sloppy. Because to me, it feels more like a fight versus like if we ever get into, I mean, eventually like Lucha Libre, where it's more choreographed and Cirque du Soleil. Yeah, like, you know, and that's really fun stuff. But I'm always more of a fan of like if something's a little off or a little
sloppy.
You don't
want it to be street fightish.
Right. I like that.
Okay. Well, I agree. But the problem with the pile driver is that it's not a street fight move.
It doesn't have to be a street fight. But I don't mind when things aren't executed perfectly.
The pile driver is like the crane kick, okay? You can't just kick a guy in the side of the head with a crane kick and have it look cool. You got to stand there on one foot for a good 4 or 5 seconds. You got to get the guy's feet straight up and down.
All right.
And get the crowd going, oh, it's going to happen now, it's going to happen now, and then a straight line down to the mat.
I'm curious. I want you to find examples of what you think are good pile drivers.
Maybe I just watched them as a kid, and I thought they all looked cool.
Right.
Now I just realize
this is what they all look like.
That it's a just terrible, ugly move.
Right.
I don't know. That's a good – next week – I will find some.
Find some examples of what you think is a good pile driver.
I will.
Okay.
Okay. So the end of this match, was this unprecedented? Has this never happened before? A guy has a three count in the bag and he pulls him off it just to beat him up more?
No, that's a real heel tactic. It's not unprecedented, but it's fairly unprecedented on a major show in a title match for no reason here. Like, I mean, they could have ran these guys out of the country. What are they doing?
They could have never had to deal with the Bulldogs ever again.
It was the height of arrogance.
As long as they didn't visit England, which why would they?
Right. Stay away.
It's a terrible place.
No one's good there.
So I thought that was really cool. I was like, ah, this is probably going to end well for them.
Yeah.
And what I noticed during the match is that Monsoon...
Hang on, let me ask you this. Do you feel like it makes them look strong still, though, that they had the win, that they could have beaten the team? Because sometimes it's used to protect the losing team. Because in theory, if you're losing, it may look a little weak.
Won.
It's like they would have won, but they kind of...
Yeah.
So it legitimizes the Dream Team.
Yeah. I guess if you want to legitimize them, why not just let them win?
Well, because you had to let the other guys win. But anyway, go ahead. Gorilla was going to say what?
Gorilla, you know, I made fun of him saying pandemonium so often. And he didn't say the word pandemonium at all during this match. He kept saying mayhem. I was like, he found a new word. They told him about it. But then as soon as the final result comes in, it's pandemonium again. I was like, he was just saving it. That son of a bitch.
Saving it for the big moment. He's like Jeanette.
He set me up so hard. It was great.
Saving it for the end. It was pandemonium, though.
Yeah, it was pandemonium. Especially since Ozzy Osbourne was like, yeah, the British Bulldogs forever.
So what did you think of the finish, though? Did you think that was super nasty when Dynamite takes that shot to the head and just crumples to the floor off the top rope? Because that's really like a gross bump he takes.
Yeah, that was head-to-head big time.
Yeah.
He probably really got hurt there.
So this is my favorite part of the end of this thing, right? So, like, the Bulldogs have killed themselves in this match. I mean, they really took a shit-kicking in this match. Dynamite nearly died. I mean, he probably could have died at the end when Valentine's head gets slammed into him and then he collapses to the floor. Davey is, like, out of it. And then you got fucking Lou Albano and Ozzy Osbourne with the title celebrating. While the Bulldogs are like dead on the fucking mat. Like, can't even goddamn move.
It took a good 2-3 minutes
right.
for them to stand up.
And this fat slob and Ozzy Osbourne are in the ring. Like, the British Bulldogs. They said, Bulldogs forever.
Don't you worry about Dynamite. He'll be fine. I told you this was going to happen. I thought this was going to happen.
You know, it's like these poor guys are like unconscious.
The guy's crawling to the mat for his like moment of glory. And the guy's like, this is my 16th tag team champion.
Yeah,
like, dude, what are you doing?
I hate Lou Albano. But yeah, so did you like this match a lot? Would you put this up towards some of the best you've watched so far?
Yeah, I did, because I liked all four guys.
Yeah.
That's rare. Usually it's like, what is this guy doing? He's there for no reason.
Did you think it was good that they didn't use Beefcake a lot?
No, I didn't really think about that until you just said it, but I thought he had some good moves.
But that's what the key is, because they don't let him get overexposed. They would let him come in, hit a few couple good moves, and get the fuck out of the way.
I noticed that one with the Hogan tag team matches. He doesn't get a lot of ring time.
Yeah. Well, that's
but that's
more
just
of a...
because of a, they're all trying to railroad him, which
right.
is the point of this whole arc of matches.
Right. And you'll see that's a common theme when it comes to Hulk Hogan. Right. That's
I feel funny. Bad. It's like, can you just let someone be good at something?
Let's let him have a friend.
Jeez.
All right. Any final thoughts on that match?
Well, you mentioned Dynamite getting hit really hard. And a lot of times when a match does finally end, because when they're doing these big title matches, in order to keep the title story going, it's like a disqualification,
mm-hmm.
which I understand the narrative points of that. But if it does finally end in a pin, the guy gets knocked unconscious for some reason. He takes some blow to the head, and it's like, now I get to pin him.
Right.
So when does like concussions and things like that start creeping into the...
In real life or in storyline?
In real life. Or both.
I don't know if we want to go down the path of real-life wrestling concussions. I mean, it's an epidemic, just due to the style.
All right, never mind, I asked.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Is it ever in the, oh, you know.
Well, I will say this.
I got knocked out and now I can't wrestle because I have head problems, but then he magically comes out of an ambulance, for example. Say there's an ambulance match.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of these
They've
guys.
They've done worked fake concussion stuff. Okay. But not in the last, like, 6 or 7 years.
It's like irresponsible.
It's a thing. So now they actually have concussion testing, and if a guy shows signs of concussion, they'll end the match. Like, they're much more open about their policies when it comes to, like, health and wellness. But in the 80s, I mean, I'm sure guys got concussions, like, every fucking night and just kept wrestling. And that's why a lot of them took drugs and died. But
all right, so this is now the British Bulldogs are the tag team champions.
Forever.
And they will never lose the title.
We'll see eventually. So why don't we take a break? We got 3 matches left. We're going to conclude WrestleMania 2, and then we're going to head into the summer for a couple of big matches. Hope everyone's enjoying the show. When we return, we'll get back into it.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
All right, we're back here from break. Jeff Learns Wrestling, episode number 4. And we are continuing our trek to 1986, back to WrestleMania 2. We head to L.A. this time, where Jesse Ventura, Lord Al Hayes, and Elvira have the call for our big WWF Championship match inside a steel cage, Hulk Hogan battling King Kong Bundy. Let me ask you right off the bat, did King Kong Bundy seem like a legitimate challenger to you?
Yeah, it's huge.
So you bought him as a threat to Hogan?
Yeah, I mean, well, they said he's 468. I don't really think he's that much.
Yeah. They're always going to fudge the weights a little bit.
Yeah, he seemed pretty big.
So going into the match, would you have maybe thought he could win?
Yeah, I figured, you know, if he could do enough like grappling type stuff and maybe, you know, secretly hit the guy with a roll of quarters from his crotch because he seems like kind of a jackass.
Right.
I saw as possible.
What did you think of the build?
Like a sheikish level villain.
Yeah. What did you think of the build leading into it? Did you see any of that in the video where, like, the on Saturday's main event, he attacked Hogan and dropped all the splashes on him?
Yeah. Yeah. It was him and
Morocco.
Morocco? I don't know who that is, do I?
No, we haven't really seen him yet. Might give us a Morocco.
Yeah, so Hogan was fighting someone else, right?
He was fighting Morocco, yeah.
Okay.
And then Bundy came in. It was all a ruse. And Bundy came in and...
And that was all because of Heenan.
Right. Yep. So the whole build-up to that was that they busted up Hogan's ribs. And then Hogan had to go to the doctor. And the doctor said, you know, eventually said it was clear. And then Hogan was training. But he comes into the match with a tape on his ribs and all that. So Bundy can target the ribs. And that they did that to give Bundy more legitimacy that he could maybe win the match.
No, the doctor actually didn't say it was clear.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he said, yeah.
He's like, I've advised Hogan not to participate in WrestleMania, but then you got Mean Gene in there, and he's like, Hulkster, what are you doing? This isn't very safe, and he's like doing deadlifts and stuff, and then he puts something around his neck, and he starts doing chin-ups, and it's funny, Gene's like, all right, you've done enough chin-ups, we get the point, you're really strong.
Does that make you think Hogan's like a badass when you see that? Like, do you think this is the fucking greatest guy in the world when he's just doing cool shit like that, fighting through injuries and lifting and doing chin-ups with the weights on his neck?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to fight in a wrestling match, but if you're going to work out beforehand, that's like super badass. How's that guy?
He's the man. All right, so we head inside the cage. Give me your thoughts.
Well, this harkens back to the present Great Balls of Fire because Bundy starts talking about the ambulance.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to put him in an ambulance. And I'm like, oh, man, these guys with the ambulances. Yeah. It's like
it's a pride point if you put a guy in an ambulance.
Yeah, it's like a universal theme. It's
send
like,
him to the hospital.
fire on the ambulances. I loved the cage. Finally, the cage was actually a real steel cage.
Right. So you're glad to be away from the fence and onto the big blue bars.
Yeah, like any idiot can fall into a chain link fence. This was like real like prison bars style. Mm-hmm. I was excited about that. I thought someone would bleed a lot, and it turned out to happen, but was it real blood or...
Oh, yeah. Real blood.
I'm saying, like, was it because of the cage?
Oh, no, he probably bladed.
Because after he hit his head, he falls on the mat, and then Heenan is, like, petting him.
Right.
So he probably slipped him something. Huh?
Yeah, or cut him.
Do they have to practice how to cut themselves?
I think you just learn over time with the practice,
like,
yeah.
What do you... Like, how deep do you go? Do you just, like, poke yourself?
I think you just make a little enough to, you know, draw some blood. But I think like if you're a younger guy, usually if you're wrestling a veteran, you're going to get bladed. Usually they'll do it for you because, you know, you may not know how or maybe a little nervous to do it. The more veteran guys. I mean, you'll see guys like a Dusty Rhodes just has like millions of scars on his head because he just bladed so many fucking times.
Blading since he was born.
That's it.
Just cutting teeth, cutting himself.
Forehead. We have to do that in RSV in November. Dusty Blade.
Give me that blade, baby.
All right, what else do you think of this match?
Well, it kind of harkened back to the Andre Kamala fight, mm-hmm. where the heel kept trying to escape way too early.
Yeah.
Which, for me, I think that lends to the format. So if you have a steel cage match, and the winner is the first person to get out, maybe think about the winner is the last person in the cage. So in order to win, you have to throw the other guy out. So maybe that would be better.
This is a guy named Vince Russo we'll learn about someday. Just keep that idea in mind, because he was like always trying to come up with crazy ideas like that.
Oh, I thought he was gonna be a guy who died.
No, he was a creative guy. So anyway,
I'm a creative guy. I mean, it's probably too late at this point, but maybe if I had started watching these 30 years.
No,
ago,
but I mean, a creative guy, like he worked on the creative team
of the WWE.
Yeah.
Okay.
Way back.
All right. So I'll never actually meet him.
Vince Russo? No, yeah. It's probably for the best.
Okay.
So he So yeah, the cage concept. I mean, I think we talked about this in the past where NWA cage matches were always like still pinfall. It was just meant to keep people out. And I think it depends too on the style of the feud. Like in this one, you know, if a guy wants revenge or wants to hurt someone, they're not trying to get out of the cage. But Bundy simply was there to try and get the title. So that's why he just keeps going for the fucking door to get out, because he just wants, he doesn't care about, he's already injured Hogan, and he only did it so he could win the title. So now that's all he cares about, is putting Hogan down long enough that he can get out of the cage.
Yeah. Well, does anybody ever get the title? Because, like, they only get one shot, and then they just keep losing. Is everyone just getting mad, or is everyone getting a share of Hogan's money?
In real life?
Yeah, in real life. How do you let one person keep the title for this long?
It because he's kinda drawing such big money that everyone, it trickles down. Now, is everyone getting what Hulk Hogan's getting? No, but if you're working directly with him, I think guys were fine losing all around the country for 6 months against Hulk Hogan because they were getting main event level money with Hogan. So yeah, they get a split, they get a percentage of the gate.
That actually makes sense because Vince McMahon said something about, what do you feel about Bundy Mania? And the girl he was talking to was like, it doesn't really sound that good.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're Bundy and Bundy Mania is going to make you $1 million, right, you might as well lose to Hulk Hogan.
Right. You'd rather lose to Hulk Hogan than beat, like, Junkyard Dog, like, five matches down. You know what I mean? Like, you'd rather be losing to Hogan in the main event. That's where you're going to make all your money.
True.
So, all right, what else you got for this one?
The event was nice. As far as the in-cage wrestling, it was kind of the same problem with the just two big guys doing power stuff to each other.
Yeah.
But I like the cage in terms of the throwing guys back and forth because I can never tell. Are they hitting the cage when they hit the ropes?
A little bit, yeah. I think they're
like bouncing. Yeah, like they're bouncing off the ropes, but then like hitting the cage, and
right.
There was some definite real pain there, and you know, as a sadist, I thought it was really fun.
Did you like when Bundy comes off the ropes and Hogan power slams him? That's like the best move of the match, I think.
Yeah, that was cool, especially since Heenan was like, he's unslammable, and then Monsoon was like, actually, this might have been a different event, but whatever, it's the same two guys. I think that's later on in our show. But he's like, that's been proven wrong by several people on several occasions. It's actually not hard to slam them at all. But yeah, that's always cool. See a guy that big get slammed. Definitely not 468 pounds, though.
No.
I'm sticking by that one.
It's probably maybe a little under four bills, I'm guessing. The condominium with legs, as Gorilla Monsoon calls him.
I mean, he's a poet, really.
He is.
He's a wordsmith.
Were you happy Hogan won? Were you surprised?
I was, but Hogan, it was kind of funny watching him crawl over the thing because he, back to the old guy jumping on the stone wall, right, he kind of gets to the top and he like puts his foot, it's like, they're waiting to make the call that he's out, and then right. He like, nope, grabs on again. It's like, oh, he's slowly crawling over the top.
He's like so careful.
He's probably going to get there, and then Bundy has to like look back at him. He's like, can I, all right, now I'm going to start walking toward the door. Like, that's tough timing because if he gets out first, you know, you just
blows everything up.
Yeah. But he made it.
That's how you get Bundy Mania.
And who is the British guy?
Lord Alfred Hayes.
Oh, is that who it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you like him?
Yeah, he was cool. He's like, he had that British quality to him where he's just talking about everything as like grandiose.
Right, very like, refined.
Literally everyone on their feet in the arena. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, dude. Who is this guy? But he was cool.
Yeah, he's very regal in his speech. Hogan beats up Bobby Heenan after. Did you like that or? I think it was over the top.
Dude, Heenan took a shot. He threw him right into the cage.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Heenan's a good bumper. And it's kind of cool because it ends up starting the wheels in motion of Heenan now spending like the next X amount of years trying to get revenge on Hogan indirectly from this attack. But pretty much where it goes from here. And we'll see in our next match that like he just now he's making his quest to end Hulkamania. Now that he's dispatched Bundy and beat the shit out of him on national TV, you know, inside of a cage.
That's very ambitious.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how that turns out for him.
Well, we're going to find out phase two of that plan. Any final thoughts on Hogan Bundy? Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay.
I mean, Hogan title match, steel cage.
It felt like a big match to you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, let's go to Primetime Wrestling is where they showed this match. That's where we watched it. It was Hulk Hogan and Paul Orndorff against King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. So Orndorff, we had seen him at WrestleMania 1, and remember Piper, they accidentally cost each other the match, and they end up blaming Orndorff for the loss, so Orndorff turns face, and him and Piper have this great feud in 85, and then Orndorff ends up befriending Hulk Hogan, and they become really close buddies, and you know they're teaming up a lot.
Yeah, but, so that stuff I missed.
Right.
I missed the Orndorff becoming face stuff.
Yeah. So
which this one kind of didn't make sense to me going into it.
Yeah, I guess Max should have showed you a little something there. But anyway.
But he was kind of an asshole face.
Right. He's still like
I am friends with Hogan. I'm friends with Hogan. I don't care. I'm friends with Hogan.
Yeah.
Who's that guy? Who's the drag queen guy?
Adrian Adonis. Adorable Adrian Adonis.
Wow. That guy is awesome.
And so he has a cool evolution. He starts as like a street thug guy.
He's like the Klinger of wrestling.
He starts as like a street thug, like a New York tough. And then he starts carrying around this briefcase that says Relax with Trudy. And this is around the time of that song Relax was out by...
Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah. And so like it was meant to be the slow transition of him. Like his Trudy was supposed to be like his other persona or whatever. And they kind of dropped the Trudy stuff. But then he starts becoming more flamboyant and starts wearing...
So his name was Adrian Adonis.
Yeah. His name was already Adrian Adonis. And then he becomes adorable Adrian Adonis. And he starts, basically becomes a drag queen. And they find different ways basically not to come out and say he's gay. Like they kind of reference him coming out of the closet, but not really. And of course, it's 1986. So they're not always like classy about it. You know what I mean? Like a lot of faggot chants, you know, a lot of stuff like that from the crowd. You know, a lot of, oh, look at this priss. You know, like kind of like stuff like just shit like that. 80s bullshit.
Was he really gay or was he just making fun of gay people?
He wasn't either. He was just like portraying a guy who was just a flamboyant.
Because his makeup is kind of slapdash.
Right.
Like at least he could put it on.
Well, he's a fat slob. He's not going to put a lot of effort. He's tired. You know, he's not going to put a lot of effort into anything.
Well, yeah, I guess it's sexist to me to think that a woman has to be neat. Right. They're a sloppy woman too.
Yeah, he can be sloppy.
Okay.
It's a sloppy pig. So he's wearing he's got the muumuu on and everything else. So yeah, he started his own. So Roddy Piper used to do Piper's Pit. He left to go make a movie. They Live. I think you've heard of it.
Oh my God, I've seen it. Have you seen it?
I have. A long time ago.
So good.
So he went to go make They Live and he left the Piper's Pit to Adrian Adonis and he makes it the Flower Shop. And that's where he does his interviews on the Flower Shop.
They changed Piper's Pit to the Flower Shop?
While Piper was gone.
That is hilarious.
So Orndorff, who is friends with Hogan, comes on the Flower Shop and they start planting these seeds of doubt. Are you really friends with Hogan? You know, where is he when you need him?
Seeds of doubt thing intentional on your part?
Why?
Is that what they say? Flower Shop?
No, it wasn't. I just said it.
That's amazing.
You like it?
We should just stop.
We can stop.
He went on the Flower Shop and planted these seeds of doubt.
So they plant the seeds with their thumb. And
kudos to you, man. That's great.
So they plant the seeds and they put the doubt in his head saying, are you really friends with Hogan? Hogan doesn't care about you. He's just using you. Orndorff wants to prove him wrong. I'll call Hogan right now, right here. Hogan.
And he doesn't answer the phone. He
doesn't answer the phone for his buddy. And
what kind of a scumbag wouldn't immediately run to the phone when someone called them
and pick it up? So he doesn't. And it's not like now you know who's calling. How does he know who's calling? So Orndorff is, you know, embarrassed now that his friend didn't pick up the phone. And they have they start working these tag matches on TV, which is rare for Hogan to be on TV. And Orndorff doesn't tag him in for one. He's kind of taking the spotlight and he's giving Hogan shit. And did you watch the interview or the backstage before this match where Hogan explains to him? I don't know if that was on the clip I'd given you. The one I watched today.
How he was lifting weights.
Yeah, you know I don't answer the phone when I'm lifting, brother.
I only had 4 squats left, and then I called you right back. What's the matter with you? Get your head in the game. We got to fight over here.
So good. So King Kong Bundy is now working with Big John Studd. This is Bobby Heenan's big, like, monster heel team. No one can slam them. No one can beat them. That's, like, their whole gimmick. So we go into Primetime Wrestling, I think it was, like, Championship Wrestling, whatever the TV show was. And... for this big tag team bout. What did you think of this match between Hogan and Orndorff and Bundy and Studd?
I thought... When was the last time that I saw John Studd? Was that when he fought Andre? Was it like several years before?
WrestleMania 1. That was about a year before this.
Oh, okay.
Maybe like 14 months before.
Maybe it was just the lighting.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I thought... I can kind of see what was coming at this point after the fight in the locker room. And they played Real American, and Hogan's like, woohoo, doing his thing. And like Orndorff is like 10 feet behind him, making a scowl. And I just cannot believe how old Orndorff looks. I know we talked about this already. That's all I could think of. I'm like, that guy was like younger than me now, right then?
Yeah.
Anyway, and it's then of course, it's like the same thing where he starts wrestling, and then he won't tag Hogan in. So I was like, okay, I can kind of see where this is coming. I mean, he's acting like a little bitch, right. Basically. Like, why are you taking all the credit? And then he tries to slam, was it Studd, I think?
Right, he can't do it.
Can't do it.
And then he gets tagged out, and then Hogan slams him, and then he gets mad.
Right.
I was like, all right, this is officially...
And then he gets hit in the head by Hogan, by accident.
I mean, I can imagine, yeah, he like barrels backwards and hits him off the deck, and he's like, oh my God. And then I was thinking it was stupid, but then if I was 13 years old, which is like the main audience for this stuff, I guess.
Especially at that time.
I would probably be pissed. I'd be like, oh man, why don't you let him body slam him?
Right.
He almost had him. You're such a jerk. You're like, oh, let me go in there.
Oh, you would have thought about a Hogan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Because, I mean, I know...
I mean, it's such an obvious heel thing to do, to just become, like, mad for that reason and turn on your guy, but...
So you weren't surprised when he clotheslined him after the match?
Oh, yeah. I could see that. Especially when Hogan was on the ground. He's like, oh, come on. Come on, get up. He's, like, holding his head. I'm like, all right, he's just going to knee him in the face or something. And he just happened to wait and clothesline him.
It's funny because I think that goes down as, like, one of the biggest... shocking heel turns ever. So I think maybe in the moment more, like, I don't know, maybe just as a kid in the moment, I wasn't watching at that point live, so I can't speak to it, but I know there are a lot of people that say, like, that was a moment that hooked them on wrestling. That was, like, one of the big, like, moments of their childhood when Hulk Hogan get turned on by his best friend. And this is kind of the first time it happens. It'll happen again a few times, but this is, like, the first time Hogan really has, like, a good close friend, like, turn on him.
So this is before the thing that I was told to forget that I watched. Okay.
We're like, 3 years before.
See, that makes sense.
Okay. So this is the first time Hogan gets screwed by a friend.
Yeah. So I guess it might have been more shocking to me if I'd seen that first.
Right.
But, yeah, it is pretty... The announcers did a good job.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, they're still the champions and yada, yada, yada. And, oh, God. what is happening? They were, like, legitimately shocked about it. They're like, is this even really happening?
And it did. It happened. So, again, it's part of Bobby Heenan's revenge tour here on Hulk Hogan by having his good buddy getting in his head and getting in his ear and putting the seeds of doubt on the flower shop and getting, you know, ends up turning on him. And now Orndorff becomes a prized piece of Bobby Heenan's Heenan family.
Come to the flower shop. Seeds of doubt, 50% off.
Did you like the after where Adonis comes in and they're celebrating?
Yeah, I mean, that was weird because I understand if, like, partners have fallings out. If Orndorff is like, you know what, screw Hogan, he's getting all this credit, I can beat him. But then for him to just be like high-fiving Big John Studd.
He's instantly friends with them.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. He's just trying to beat the crap out of him. Like, hey man, thanks for hating Hogan too. You hate Hogan? I hate Hogan. Let's go to the cafe and hate Hogan together.
We all hate Hogan. I mean, I think the idea was that Bobby Heenan was behind the turn. Like, he had gotten into Orndorff's head enough, and, like, so it was kind of a plan.
Like, oh, okay, I'll be with you guys now.
Right. So, I mean, that's a trope of wrestling that you just get used to, is that when a guy's a face, he's friends with the faces. When he's a heel, he's friends. They've got away from it more, especially when we get to what's called, like, the Attitude Era in the late 90s. They get away from that, where everyone's kind of just their own. But during this stretch, if you're a bad guy, you're hanging out with the bad guys, pretty much. If you're a good guy, you're hanging out with the good guys, and that's it.
Yeah.
Change your attitude.
Also another bad pile driver.
You thought so? Because Orndorff usually has one of the best ones.
He was crooked.
Yeah. You're a stickler on the pile driver.
I'm just saying, it's a weird coincidence. And another thing that I sort of was prophetic about was the, like, you're like, oh, you know, they're helping each other out when they're doing the suplex. At one point, Orndorff, I think it was Stud, yeah, and he does the rollover thing, and he grabs him, and he tries to pin him that way. He grabbed his pants. He pulled him down. It was like full ass shot.
Yeah.
So it's not just me. It's like, oh, there's got to be some logistical problems with grabbing the guy's waist.
Oh, sure, sometimes. The suplex, though, you're at least coming up with the pants. You're not pulling him down.
Yeah, but you could rip him. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. It seems like an awkward thing to me.
One of the best suplexes I told you on Sunday was that guy Cesaro that we watched. He deadlifts a guy where he's standing on the ropes and the guy's on the apron. And he lifts him all the way up. And he's not really using the tights. He's pretty much deadlifting him up over and down. That's how strong that fucking guy is.
Cesaro was, he's big.
Yeah.
Strong guy.
All right, let's get to our main event of the evening. And that is, takes us to the big event in Toronto where Hulk Hogan is battling now his arch enemy, Paul Orndorff. They've gone around the country. Orndorff's been chasing Hogan. Gets his big title shot here. Friends explode in Toronto. This is in front of a very large crowd. This is like a big deal, this show.
It was like outside, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at the CN Center in Toronto. I'm sorry, no, it was at Exhibition Stadium. Outdoors. And that was 61,000 people announced for this show. So that's a crazy, really big show. Gorilla Monsoon, Johnny V, and Ernie Ladd on commentary. Ernie Ladd was a former NFL star that turned wrestler. Pretty well regarded.
Johnny V, who's that?
So that was Luscious John from the manager of the Dream Team.
Oh, who's the one who sounded like the cool Southern black guy?
That's Ernie Ladd.
Okay.
Because that's what he was. That's exactly what he was a cool Southern black guy.
He's like, yeah, you know, Paul Orndorff is the man. He's like, really, he sounded like somebody from my childhood, but I'll get back to you.
Okay. Brother O'Donnell?
Could be.
Definitely not. All right. Hogan Orndorff, what did you think?
Orndorff came out to Real American. Was that on purpose or was it an accident?
Insult.
It was on purpose.
He was doing it to fuck with Hogan. He did it like in all his matches leading up to this. He was using it to mock Hogan. He'd come out with a Hulkamania shirt and rip it. And he was just kind of doing it to like just make a mockery of Hogan.
Speaking of the shirt, we never mentioned this about the Bundy match, but he climbed to the top of the steel cage to rip his shirt. And he kind of couldn't really rip it. Do you remember that?
Yeah. You think it was the footing or do you think it was the shirt?
I think it was a little of both, but he pulled it and it went up to his neck. And then he realized, oh, it's not going to rip anymore because it's around my neck. So he just pulled it off. I was like, oh, that was embarrassing. But, yeah, this match was kind of crazy. The referee played a really big part in this match, which I don't understand. Because the first thing I noticed about the referee was that he pulled Hogan's hair out of, like, because he had him in, like, an illegal hold. And he literally grabbed his hair.
Right.
And Hogan goes, ah. And the announcer said something about it. But then they never mentioned it again. And I was like, all right, well, there's got to be something going on with this referee. How does Hogan, like...
Sometimes referees just get overzealous and they, you know, they try and break the...
So do you think after the match, like backstage, Hogan was like, dude, don't touch my hair. Yeah. That's not cool. You don't pull a man's hair.
Or they're just trying to, like... Some of it could have been to get over the point that Hogan is manic in trying to kill Orndorff for revenge. So he's so crazed that he's doing, like, illegal shit and the referee can't... He can't back him off, so he's going to pull his hair to try and break the hold because Hogan is such in this worked-up state of rage.
Oh, that seems like a stretch. I think the ref was just a dick.
Yeah. Tomato, tomato. Tomato.
That's who reminded me of that Ernie Ladd. He sounded like Jim Rice.
Yeah, he does sound like Jim Rice a little bit.
Like, I played baseball in the 70s. Paul Orndorff is a great wrestler. Yeah. That's what he sounds like. That'd be cool if Jim Rice wrestled. Does he ever wrestle?
No.
Bummer.
Sorry. Lawrence Taylor does.
Really? That's a perfect match. Got all that cocaine.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We're definitely going to watch that.
Nice. Oh, can we watch the Floyd Mayweather Big Show match?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. That's one of the best celebrity matches ever.
Because I don't know about... This is the day after the first press conference with McGregor, and now I'm like obsessed with this match. I don't know about you. I don't know what the PTB Nation...
Of McGregor...
McGregor Mayweather.
You got to come watch it? You want to go watch it?
Absolutely, yes.
I think we're going to go somewhere to watch it.
Did you see the press conference from last night?
I saw some clips. I saw the pinstripe suit that says fuck you or whatever.
I want to be friends with this guy.
Yeah. He does seem like your cup of tea.
He definitely is. He has fuck you knitted into his suit.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that on another show, I'm sure.
All right. So what else do you think of this one?
Well, he just basically beats the shit out of Hogan for a good 10, 15 minutes. And I'm like, all right, eventually he's going to do the hulking up thing, which he does. But it was like... A really long prelude to that.
Heat segment.
I mean, he had that one suplex outside the ring, which basically injured him for a good 5 or 10 minutes. So it's kind of reminiscent of the Bulldogs getting hit. So I couldn't tell. Is he really hurt or is he just...
Selling really well?
Yeah.
Did you like Orndorff's offense? I thought he was like really crisp and efficient with it. Like he didn't really waste much time or moves, like everything kind of had a purpose and was hard hitting and nothing looked like soft or weak.
Yeah, he was brutal.
Yeah.
It was tough to watch.
They talk about like how Hogan working, these two guys working together every night across the country, like Hogan had like nerve damage in his neck and stuff from like taking like the shots from Orndorff.
Really?
Yeah. And like Orndorff.
Well, actually, the doctor told him not to wrestle.
Right, he did warn him.
He told him he might have a herniated disc. You should have listened to him.
And Orndorff actually hurts his arm. But he didn't want to take time off because they were making so much money. And it ended up giving him permanent damage in his arm. And in later years, you can see the nerve damage. One of his arms is smaller than the other. Like, he can't lift with it or anything. So he's got, like, a tiny arm and, like, a big arm.
Wow.
Because the nerves were so damaged, but he didn't want to stop because they were making so much money around the country that he was afraid to, like, stop and have surgery and miss out and then that'd be it. So
Well, that's cool. He should just change his name to factor in the one giant arm.
Instead of Mr. Wonderful, Mr. One Giant Arm.
Mr. One Punch.
Mr. One Tiny Arm. All right, any other thoughts on this match?
Well, it turns out being a disqualification.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why he was disqualified.
Well, Heenan interferes, right? Doesn't Heenan hit him?
Heenan comes in and hits Hogan with a chair.
Yeah.
But the referee didn't see that. The referee had been knocked out. So then the referee gets up and...
Oh, I think they said he saw it, I guess.
That's kind of weak.
Yeah.
Do they rematch at all?
Well, yeah. They fight a while. Like, they still go around the house shows in the around the country. So that's why a lot of times they'll do finishes like this, so they can keep it fresh for the local people to see them come out. And then they do one more big TV match on Saturday's Main Event that we can watch. Did you like this feud? Like, do you want to see the end of it?
Yeah. I mean, Orndorff... He seems talented enough to be champion, but, you know, Hogan has the whole Hulkamania thing going, so I'm, like, not really seeing him giving up the title for a while, but, you know, if they're going to give it to a heel, I figure it's probably going to be him.
Okay. All right, any other thoughts?
No, I was really looking forward to getting into Jake the Snake versus Ricky Steamboat, but if, unfortunately there are legal issues.
Yeah, the YouTube link got taken down, but we're going to watch something from that match. We just got to find a fresh link, and by the time we realized it today, we were out of time. But it's okay. I thought we told a nice little story. We started with a Hogan title match. We end with the Hogan title match. A lot of Hogan on this night. We saw all title matches, really, except for the tag.
Everyone's out for Hogan. Everyone's jealous. And...
jealous eyes.
Just unwarranted.
What was your favorite match of the bunch?
I kind of liked the tag team match, the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
That was good. Those guys are pretty awesome.
What was your least favorite?
Least favorite... Maybe it was just because of the time that I watched it. But that last... No. The Funk Hogan one.
Funk Hogan?
I'm not in the funk camp yet.
Okay, we'll get you there.
Feeling funky.
We'll get you feeling funky. Who was the best guy of the whole night for you?
I have to say either Orndorff or Davey Boy. Because they both had some... They got some game.
Who do you think was the worst of the night?
The worst of the night... So I can't say Heenan. He doesn't count.
You can if you want. Whatever you want to say.
Big John Studd was kind of useless.
Okay.
He didn't really do much.
That's fair. All right. I will ask you like I ask you each and every episode, Jeff. Do you want to continue on this journey?
I will continue on this journey so long as I get to some happy news relatively soon.
What's happy news mean?
Well... I'm seeing, like, the derailment of Hulk Hogan here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already watched a match that's 30 years in the future where people are just being taken out on ambulances.
Okay. So you want a happy ending?
I need, like, I don't know. I guess this arc of matches didn't really make me fall in love with anybody.
Okay.
And that's, I'm all about people.
Yeah.
Like, you know me, I've been watching sports my whole life, and I root for people more than teams.
Okay.
So...
So no one of the... Even Savage and Tito?
Oh, well, they're both kind of... Well, Tito was a nice guy, but Savage is kind of douchey.
Okay. All right. So we got the guy.
I didn't even get a flying elbow. I got a roll of quarters to the head. That's not that great.
I got the perfect guy and I don't know if it'll be the next one or the one after. We got the perfect guy and the perfect match to get you some love.
Awesome.
A nice deal. Sorry. All right. So we'll be back at some point in the next couple of weeks. Jeff Learns Wrestling. You can get the full archive at PlaceMeNation.com. Join us every day. In our comment threads, Jeff was even in there during Great Balls of Fire, so we might catch him like a shooting star flying through there every now and then.
I was enjoying all the balls of fire.
You were. All right. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Shop with us, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. So for Jeff and JT, I'm out. I'll talk to you at the Place to Be podcast and Letters from Center Stage as well. And Jeff, we'll be back here in a couple weeks.
All right. Send clips of good, well-executed power drivers to @MashadDouche on
Twitter. There you go. Get those to him so he can bring them next time. And one last thing, British Bulldogs forever.
Forever, British.